Or what about that moment in Field of Dreams when we hear, if you build it, he will come. And then Costner does it. He builds a baseball field. Well, I guess he doesn't build it. He mows down corn, and then there is a field. And then he's like, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And the bank is like, you want to pay your mortgage? And he's like, nah, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And then he finds James Earl Jones, who wrote The Boat Rocker, which I thought was a real book deep into my 20s. And he's like, people will come, Ray. He's the only one with a financial plan. But what's weird is Timothy Busfield pushes little Gabby Hoffman off the bleachers, and she falls down, and she's unconscious. Then Burt Lancaster is Moonlight Graham, and he comes up and he pats her on the back a couple times, and he's like, hot dog stuck in the throat. And then he can't go back in the game, because I guess there's a rule in ghost baseball that if you leave the field at any point to become an elderly ghost and do the Heimlich maneuver, you can't return to the field. I love Field of Dreams. That should win Best Picture.
That is just, it's great. Because there's so much absurd stuff in that movie. And just
suspension of disbelief, Rich.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Field of Dreams, not a good movie. Natural, great movie. And I know they're both sappy. I know they are. But when it comes to baseball movies, a friend of mine said that Field of Dreams was the best. And I don't know. I don't think I could be friends with him anymore. It is Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson.
But have you ever met anybody who doesn't like Major League? I don't think there's one person I've come across in my life.
I know some people who thought parts of it were dumb. I think that was like the whole. I don't think like the Corbin Burnson character. I don't care. Like, but there's so much great stuff in that movie. Oh,
Bob Uecker alone, like the lines that you know. Bob Uecker, how many memorable lines? Like 10 at least.
He was great. Like that's a great movie. Let's go to John real quick on line 2, and then we'll talk about important stuff. John, what's happening, buddy? How you doing?
What's more important than this?
That's a good,
good
point.
Yes, sir.
What are you going to say, the Red Sox? I mean, come on. Talk about bad movies. Good God. A League of Their Own was one of the more underrated movies. I thought Tom Hanks was great in that. The Natural, you just said, we were all part of the Bad News Bears. Every person was probably on a bad baseball team as a kid that sucked, yep. And you couldn't get out of your own way. And I thought The Rookie.
The rookie was pretty good with Dennis
that was good
Quaid.
When he got the pitch for Tampa Bay with Dennis Quaid, and he came out throwing 95 or whatever it was. Yep. But underrated is The Rookie, in my opinion.
Absolutely, John. Good day, gentlemen. Great call. You too. By the way, here is a baseball movie that might not be on your radar, but it's awesome. Because it was the sentimental sequel to Dazed and Confused. Dazed and Confused, one of my favorite movies of all time. It's Richard Linklater, great director. He made a movie called Everybody Wants Some, and it's about a baseball team in like Austin, Texas, who like played for the University of Texas, and it's about his time when he played baseball down there with them, and it is awesome. I believe Glenn Powell's like, it's a bunch of like people who are like really famous now.
Never seen this one.
It's awesome. It's funny as hell. It's called Everybody Wants Some, and the soundtrack is all like early 80s Van Halen and all that stuff. That is an underrated movie.
Along that same vein, Beer League with Artie Lang.
Oh, yeah. Beer League's not bad. Somebody said The Naked Gun, kind of a baseball movie. One of the greatest.
Enrico Palazzo.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but the whole thing when they're playing all the bloopers and like the lion runs down the field and mauls the dude. Yeah, that's pretty great.
That's true.
And then there's one that we should all agree is indeed the worst baseball movie of all time.
Fever Pitch. Yeah, Fever Pitch
is as bad as it gets. I mean, that was, first of all, the fact that during that huge Red Sox win that they let stupid-ass Jimmy Fallon on the field to film that scene is just, it's unforgivable. And, like, Jimmy Fallon was so bad in that movie, too. You know the thing about baseball? You can't fake it.
No, it's trash.
I know. It made Red Sox fans look like morons.
I will watch Everybody Wants Some. It actually gets pretty good reviews.
It's great. It's really, really good. And I don't know why it wasn't bigger than it was. I guess because it didn't have, at the time, nobody was a real star in it. But it's kind of the, as I said, the sentimental sequel to Dazed and Confused.
Cool.
Yeah, it's great.
80s, like an 80s theme, you're saying.
Yeah. It's set in Texas in the early 80s. And the soundtrack absolutely rules. No, it's a great movie. That's a good one. Moneyball, I did not like Moneyball.
People are passionate about best baseball movie. Other like football, you won't get that with football movies. I mean,
if you're going to go football movie, best football movie? Ooh, that's a tough one. You know which one I don't like, and a lot of people liked, was Any Given Sunday. I think that was so over-directed.
I like that.
Now, there are parts of it that are pretty good. Like, Willie Beeman was funny.
Steam and Willie Beeman.
Yeah, that was, but it was like so overdirected. It was,
I guess, like Field of Dreams. Rudy is a little bit controversial. It's a little bit polarizing. People either love it or hate it.
Rudy's good. Rudy's a good movie. I don't know how you can't like Rudy. Yeah, I like,
people think it's too sappy.
I even like the stupid Wahlberg walk-on movie, Invincible. Is that what it was called?
Oh, with Vince Papale.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a decent movie. Yeah. It wasn't bad.
There are not that many good football movies. Maybe none.
No, Little Giants was awesome.
Little Giants was pretty funny.
Remember the Titans? Maybe. Blindside, I don't like.
Is Flash Gordon considered a football movie? He played for the Jets.
Varsity Blues.
Oh, Varsity Blues.
That's my era.
Varsity Blues was all right. It was all right. That fat guy who died, I forget what his name was, Lester, something Lester, he lost all that weight, and I remember he came in studio one time and nobody recognized him.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, this is well before that. The Water Boy, would you put that up there?
Yes, oh, The Water Boy's good. Oh, Draft Day with, speaking of Costner.
Draft Day
is entertaining.
Draft Day was hysterical. And the reason that was so funny was that obviously the NFL had a piece, like some sort of stake in that movie, because the greatest part was when Roger Goodell comes walking out on stage and goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Draft Day." And the crowd's like, "Yeah, Goodell, you're the best. Oh, NFL. We love NFL. Goodell, oh, you're so loved." As if they've never watched a draft before where everybody boos them. By the way, there's a ton of people who agree with me that Everybody Wants Some is a great baseball movie. Real quick, Andy, just because this, everyone seems to be passionate about this. Andy on line two. What's up, Andy? How's it going?
Nobody's talking about his Little Big League. As someone with the kid's grandfather dies, and he owns like the Minnesota Twins, and then the kid becomes the owner.
I don't remember that one. I don't remember that one at all. Yeah, not quite sure. By the way, All the Right Moves was pretty good. That was not a bad football movie. Oh, what was the wannabe major league? Oh, Necessary Roughness.
Oh, I saw that in the theater.
Yeah, I did
just,
too.
Just to try to take a look at, what's her name?
Kathy Ireland?
Yeah, Kathy Ireland.
Well, Kathy Ireland
was underwhelming in that movie.
She was the kicker for the team, and I remember one like dude on the team like pushed her down and said, "Welcome to football." And then she goes and kicks him in the nuts and goes, "Welcome to football." Great writing. Obviously done by the masters. Oh, The Last Boy Scout. Last Boy Scout was all right.
That was all right.
Last Boy Scout was that opening scene where the guy's like, you can tell he's like totally coked out or something, and he's running, and there's somebody, one person between him and the end zone, and he takes out a gun and shoots the guy. And you're like, ooh, that's a good opening. Good opening.
But The Dark Knight, you get the football field that blows up.
Oh, yeah.
Bane blows up whatever it is, Pittsburgh Stadium.
That movie was not very good. Hardball. Hardball, good too. Not bad. Yeah, football movies are, The Program. Great movie. The Program, I saw that in the theater before they took out that scene. Remember they had to remove that one scene where they were all as like a kind of like a hazing. They had to lie in the middle of the highway while the cars like went by them and like somebody tried it and died.
Ugh.
Yeah, so you can't find that anymore.
James Caan, right?
Everyone's saying Brian's Song, but that was too old for me. I don't.
That's Greg Hill's favorite. He always says that. I mean, it makes you cry. It is definitely emotional.
I don't really care. The Replacements was good. Remember the Titans? Oh, no. Sorry. Best football movie, without a question. Friday Night Lights. Best movie. There's not even a question. That's the best football movie.
Did you watch the series?
I didn't, and I heard it's great. But the movie Friday Night Lights is so freaking good. Like, it's like one of those that every time I watch it, it gets better. Because the crazy thing is it seems so... How is this real? Just drive through West Texas. If you've ever driven through West Texas, you will see miles ahead of you, nothing but flat land, but you'll see some sort of massive structure and you won't be able to figure out what it is. And sure enough, it is a football stadium that it looks like a college dropped out of the sky and it's a high school. It is truly, the towns out there revolve around high school football. And if anything, they undersold it in Friday Night Lights. Such a great movie. And the soundtrack was great. Billy Bob was great. Even Tim McGraw as the bad dad was really good in it.
Yeah,
that's the best football movie, without a question. Somebody said Ace Ventura, of course. Laces out, Dan, of course. All right, 617-779-7935. I don't know why I say five all the time. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are speaking, and Jason Tatum was just asked.
This is such a deceiving headline.
To clear the air. About the alleged friction with Jaylen Brown, we will play that next. It is 93.7 WEEI. Austin Powers does not hold up. I watched that recently.
Oh, really? Disappointed?
Yeah, I showed it to my kids thinking it was going to be good. You know what holds up? Zoolander.
It does not.
Zoolander's still great.
It is not.
Zoolander made me laugh. Like, so
it is a one-note film. I don't know why you love it so much. It's just the same joke for 2 hours.
No, it's more than that. And it's a great joke. That's the thing. The Zoolander character, and Will Ferrell is at his best. That's one of Will Ferrell's best roles.
Yeah, not really.
Is Mugatu, without a question. Zoolander.
Cowbell is his best role.
I was as shocked as anybody. I was as shocked as anybody that Zoolander held up.
Listen to your kids. You tried to show it to your kids. They told you it does not hold up.
Sometimes my kids are wrong. They watched Dumb and Dumber and didn't like it.
Well, Dumb and Dumber is classic.
Yeah, of course it is. It's one of the greatest films ever made. And they did not, they weren't into it. But they loved Zoolander just like me. I loved it. It's not Step Brothers. Step Brothers is still Step Brothers and Team America are the two greatest comedies ever made. But it's close. It's close. All right. It is Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson, who will be back on Monday on 93.7 WEEI. You can call us at 617-779-7937. Also launch a take grenade over there in the Odyssey app. Just press that little microphone and leave us a message. We'll play it in the 5 o'clock hour. Team America's great. And that's another movie that gets better and better every time you watch it. But we were talking yesterday about ownership of teams, now that we've seen what Bill Chisholm and the Sixth Street Private Equity Group are, and they're obviously a group that wants to constantly cut bait and save money, and they're operating this team as if it is an investment and not as if there's someone who just wants this team to win. And that got us thinking about all the other owners of all the teams, and we all came in agreement that out of the four that are here in this town, by far and away, the Crafts seem to be the best. But they are about to face a huge decision when it comes to the money that they are going to spend. They are about to have an unbelievable amount of money shoved towards several players. One, Drake May, is going to be demanding a decent amount of money. And another one is Christian Gonzalez. And that is right here, right now. Mm-hmm. And Ted isn't 100% sure that Christian Gonzalez is going to get the kind of money that he seems to be looking for. And what he is looking to do is not only set the market, but according to some reports, he wants to be one of the highest, if not the highest paid defensive player in the league. And that's why Jeremy Fowler is joining us today. Jeremy Fowler, senior NFL writer for ESPN. He has got a ranking right now of all of his the corners. Jeremy, hey, thanks for coming on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Hey, no problem.
Happy summer to you.
Hey, well, thank you. Jeremy, you've got this new ranking right here, and it was, and I love these more than just somebody's opinion. You talked to execs, coaches, and scouts, and had them rank the top cornerbacks for 2026. And where did Christian Gonzalez, after speaking to all of these people, where did they end up ranking Christian Gonzalez?
Yeah, thanks for that. I spend about 2 or 3 months scouring the NFL Earth, getting the league's pulse on 11 different positions in the top 10 and all that. So cornerbacks ran yesterday. Christian Gonzalez was the number 3 corner behind Patrick Surtain and Derek Stingley. Pretty good company, I would say. Mm-hmm. And Gonzalez is considered, he's in that small group of prototypical outside cover guys, and there are those three at the top. I think eventually Quinyon Mitchell in Philadelphia will get there. But those are the three. And then after that, it's more like pick your flavor, Trent McDuffie in L.A. or Devin Witherspoon in Seattle. But those guys are kind of inside outside, smaller guys. Denzel Ward in Cleveland's older. So, Gonzalez is up for a contract or contract eligible at the ideal time. And the league speaks highly of him. He's just the only real knock on him is some evaluators feel like he's a little finesse at times against the run. But other than that, he's got everything you absolutely need, and he can wreck a game.
Yeah, and you know what, Jeremy? You do something really cool on here is you put the highest ranking and the lowest ranking for the people you talk to, and the highest is 2. But there is somebody on your list who gave him a 10. Did they give you any kind of reason as to why? Because 10 seems a little low for this guy.
Well, 10 seems low, yes, but it is important to note that if you are a player that was on every ballot, so in other words, if your lowest is 10, that's really good. They're only like each position, usually 3 to 5 guys max that are on every ballot turned in to me. So in other words, like another player in the top 10 would be his lowest ranking is unranked, which means out of the top 10. So even though that's a 10, he was in everybody's top 10, which is a good sign because opinions really vary depending on player to player. And, it really depends on how you're looking at it too. Some pick favorites, some like guys with experience. So, if you're looking at Gonzalez and you say, hey, he doesn't fit the style of cornerback I like, or I like a more physical player, then you might not take him. But especially like most personnel guys and most defensive coaches specifically love Gonzalez because there are only so many of those type of players in the world that you can line up on the outside and say, cover this elite receiver, stride for stride downfield and do it smoothly and with patience and also play the ball and get the ball. And he's one of like three guys in the world that can do that.
Well, I think what's fascinating too, Jeremy, is that it looks like you have Christian Gonzalez in a tier above both Devon Witherspoon and Trent McDuffie. McDuffie, who got $31 million a year here recently from the Rams, and Witherspoon, who's up for a contract as well and has the same agent as Gonzalez. So how do you think, if at all, this factors into the money that Christian Gonzalez is going to get?
Yeah, it all factors in. You know, you basically play the market, right? And Trent McDuffie was the last to set the market at, I believe, $31 million a year on a new deal. So Christian Gonzalez is looking to surpass that. There's no doubt about that. I heard something mentioned earlier in the show about being one of the highest paid defensive players. Considering Will Anderson makes $50 million a year, I'd be pretty surprised at that. But this is a situation and a real test for New England. When you have a major player like this, and the only deal you can do that the player would accept is a market resetter, you know, I don't know that New England has a lot of experience with that. I know they've had great players with Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski once upon a time, I think, had a deal that reset at the time or got close to it. But most of their moves of late have been more the free agency variety. This is a test for them because you now drafted and developed a star. So are you willing to pay them what the market bears? And it's a big number, you know, and these are not easy to do. And you can always wait. You know, you can say, hey, look, you're a cornerback. You weren't a top five pick, no matter how great you were. Let's play it out and wait a year. So that will be a test for Gonzalez at that point if it even gets there. I'm not saying it is, but if it does, he's got to decide, does he hold out camp? The trend really lately is to hold in, to show up so you don't get fined, but then don't do anything and don't practice for weeks to apply some pressure. So certainly that's a mechanism I could see him utilizing here if it gets to that.
Well, our buddy Ted Johnson, he doesn't seem 100% convinced that the Patriots are going to pay that kind of money. If they were to trade him, because that's obviously another option, if they were to trade him, what do you think the Patriots could demand for a guy as talented as Christian Gonzalez?
Well, that's an interesting conversation at a different layer. I would be absolutely shocked if they entertain that. I just simply don't see that. This is a really good team. They feel like they're ready now. They feel like they're maybe a piece or two away from being right back to where they need, if not with a stronger roster than a year ago. I think they'd like another edge rusher if they can make that happen. But otherwise, they feel like they're ready to go. So to trade, you know, pound for pound, maybe your best player. I would say he's their best player.
Better than Drake?
Because if you're ranking Drake. Well, I mean, Drake's a top 10 quarterback in the league now. There's no question about that.
But top 10? A lot of people are going to get their ears up on that one. A lot of people think he's better than that around here.
You can make an argument of that, certainly. But Gonzalez is higher at his position than Drake may well be at his position. That's my point. So you could argue that Gonzalez is your best player. To run a tangent, I'd be shocked if they would even entertain trading him at any point. I think that would be a non-starter for them. These are complicated deals, but and I'm told there hasn't been a lot of progress. That's partly why he missed many, you know, part of the OTAs, and it's been a slow summer. Now, this is a slow time. We're in July 8th. There aren't a lot of deals getting done on July 8th. So my guess is they'll reconvene around training camp and try this again, but I know Seattle with Devon Witherspoon, who's the other corner up, you know, they at least have extended an olive branch and have tried to sign him. Yeah, they're not there yet, but I think they've at the very least put an offer in. So one of those two deals is probably going to get done at some point, and then it's going to set the stage for the other. So it's pretty simple math in that way. One guy's going to set the market, top cornerback, and then the next guy's going to surpass that.
Well, real quick, Jeremy, is there a chance they do try to convince Gonzo to play the entire year without a new deal? Because McDuffie did do that, right, and then they traded him. Do you think Gonzalez would go for that at some point? Does he have to play?
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of convincing. It's really a matter of what the player's leverage is and what the rules state. You know, like if you're a problem with holding out is you get fined a lot of money. And most agents would prefer their client not take losses like that. And the player would prefer that, too. So you got to kind of play within the rules while taking sort of a silent protest, which is why that Holden has been so effective. But most guys play. You know, when you miss games, you miss game checks. It's complicated. Now, there are games that can be played with your body and your availability. You know, the old hamstring injury, right? My hamstring's tight. I can't go today.
Right.
I can't go this week. You know, like those are games that are played. I'm by no means saying Christian Gonzalez would do that, but I'm saying like those are some mechanisms in place. I don't think Mike Vrabel will be overly excited about that. So at the end of the day, you know, he's an NFL player who I'm guessing will want to be on the field. I'd be surprised if it gets that far. But this is, you have a marquee guy at a marquee position. Even Trent McDuffie, for as good as he is, that's a little different because Kansas City didn't have a penchant for doing deals that early unless your name's Patrick Mahomes. And they didn't typically pay cornerbacks. So if you're McDuffie, you knew, hey, I got to play this fourth year out. Where Gonzalez is a little more established at this stage and probably has a little higher value. So he can get more squirmy if he wants.
Well, Jeremy Fowler, senior NFL writer for ESPN. I'll tell you one thing before we let you go is that if for some reason the Patriots let this slip away and they don't give him the money that he wants, there might be a riot here. I mean, he is loved in this town, and they know how good he is. And it's one of those things where I don't want to hear your justification. None of the excuses matter. You got to sign this guy. So it'll be an interesting couple of months here. And then, you know, when the season starts, to see how it goes. But my God, it's one of the biggest storylines of the offseason outside of anything having to do with Diana Rossini. So Jeremy Fowler, great stuff. Thanks for coming on with us, man. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Hey, anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you, man. All right, let's get to this Jason Tatum audio. He's talking about Jaylen Brown, and we'll do that right after this.
Hey, this is Jaylen. I'm probably on Twitch right now lowering my value, so leave a message after the beep. Peace. Yo, Jay, it's Paul George. Dude, even I can't believe they traded me for you. Brad Stevens is one stupid motherfucker.
Oh, Jaylen Brown.
That's not a way to start off the Brad Paul George relationship.
Oh, sure. Not very nice. But that is honestly the dumbest move. Even Paul George is probably like, whoa, well, I didn't see that coming.
It's stunning.
At all. All right.
Even the Mookie Betts trade is looking better. Connor Wong button left and right yesterday. He's getting on base. I mean, you got some return there.
It's going to go down as a really bad trade. Unless the Sixers implode next season, which there is a chance of that. It is Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson. By the way, Teddy J will be back on Monday, and it's 93.7 WEEI. You can call us at 617-779-7937, or you can go to the Odyssey app and launch us a take grenade. We play your messages right around like 5:30 or so. You press that little microphone button and leave that for it, and we'll pop it here on the air. The Jaylen Brown thing is interesting, and Jason Tatum is because now it's at the point where they're all being asked about it, and there's microphones in front of them. With Jaylen Brown, it's because he's coming back in town, and he's doing a lot of stuff with his charity. As a matter of fact, tomorrow, he was supposed to do that appearance for his shoe brand across the street from the TD Garden. But I guess that so many people were expected to come that they canceled it and they're trying to do something bigger. Because I know that if he announces he's going to make an appearance somewhere in town, dude, it's going to be flooded.
You think he's trying to plan it for like the same date Tatum's doing something else in town?
Promoting his, hey, Captain Kidd's Dunkaroo or whatever book is.
That's a wholesome book, kid's book. Come on, you can't dump
but
one for that.
But yeah, what is it like
Good Morning America?
It's
today?
Called like Little Tatum, and he's, you know, it's like the Muppet Babies. He's got like a big head and a tiny little basketball body.
Sure. But this is why they love Tatum so much. He's Good Morning America material. You know what I mean? He's the face.
Tatum is so boring. Like, Tatum is such a great player, but off the court, he is mashed potato sandwich.
Okay.
Just as boring as it gets. Well,
Sometimes that's better for the usage numbers, you know what I mean? You're not on Twitch every night. Exciting is not always the best.
There's a reason why he and Brad Stevens get along so well. They're both just like milquetoast. Like, they're the two guys, you know, they're probably the ones that read books about concrete. Like, I remember that there was one time that who was it? The quarterback for the...
Watches the Weather Channel.
Who was the quarterback for the Colts who ended up getting injured and stopped playing? Come on. The dude, he was like such a great... Supposed to be like an all-time great quarterback like 10 years ago. Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck one time was in, because he's a total nerd, Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was interviewed.
He's like a Civil War reenactor.
Well, I mean, I think that was the meme that took out after that. But no, he was asked what he did for fun. He said he read books about concrete. And I can totally see Brad Stevens and Jason Tatum doing that. Like, just very, very boring, which is good for basketball. You know what? The less controversy, fine. You just concentrate on your game. You don't have to be entertaining. Just get in there. Yeah,
I think Kevin McHale was a real firecracker. I mean, yeah, he was just out about his business.
Give us 30-something a night, and you know, you stay healthy, I'm A-okay with that. But come on, compare him to Anthony Davis. And it's just like, dude, you are boring. And these interviews that Tatum's been doing for, you know, Kid McDunkaroo or whatever it's called is just, like, the worst.
The worst. I mean,
they're awful. Like, there was like, who did you root for? Did you root for the Knicks? And he goes, no, I couldn't root for the Knicks. And they're like, and they're buckled over laughing. And it's just because they felt like hostages. Because I'm guilty of it as anyone else, is that you have a guest that's super boring. So if they say anything that shows the slightest bit of humanity, you overreact to it. You go, whoa!
The world needs stability. Just because you're a psycho, you know, you don't have to side with the psychos all the time. You know, would you have given Jalen the max over Tatum? Would you have picked JB over JT if you could only have one max guy?
I don't know what that has to do with anything. I just think Tatum's boring. Like, Tatum's a boring guy.
Okay, but
at least Jalen's saying stuff. And now it's dumb stuff. Like, you know, you shouldn't be saying that. I don't want to say dumb stuff. He's not dumb. But he's, you know, saying that it was your favorite season wasn't advisable.
Stephen A. Smith, yeah.
You know, and like challenging Stephen A. Smith and stuff like that isn't advisable. But he's way more interesting than Jason Tatum. And the reason I say that is because Jason Tatum was doing his, you know, little TV go-around thing for, you know, Goodnight Basketball McDunkaroo Kid, mm-hmm. his new book. And he was asked about what's going on with him and what he thinks about the Jaylen Brown trade. And it was just a tour de force of energy. Do you have it there, Stiz? Okay, let's take a listen.
Jaylen Brown, for example, we showed this clip. You know, he's been traded. We showed a clip of a little boy mm-hmm. crying. I mean, people have all sorts of feelings about it. And now people are pitting you guys against each other, saying, oh, they're not as close off the court as they are on the court. What is the truth? What is the deal?
I think, for one, I have nothing, obviously, but love and respect.
And you said that.
It's tough when, you know, you're a professional athlete and everything we do is publicized and nitpicked. Mm-hmm. And it's been like that, you know, we played together for 9 years. There was a period of our career where, you know, we hadn't won a championship yet. Mm. But in retrospect, we were only 23 and 21 years old.
Yeah, you were kids.
So the expectations were so high. And so they just had to figure out a reason why we hadn't won yet. Mm. And, you know, they tried to pin us against each other and say that one guy shouldn't be here or whatnot. But the truth is, we had 9 amazing years together. We went to the finals twice. We won a championship. Mm-hmm. So I'll forever be grateful for, you know, those memories and the time that we spent together.
You know what, Stiz? You're
Rice pilaf. That's what he is. Rice pilaf.
Right.
More importantly, he dodged the entire question. I mean, he did not clear any air. I've seen these headlines like Tatum clears the air. I mean, he just read the Wikipedia page.
Like, what are you going to say? You know, at this point, the thing is that they don't. These reports that are coming out, like the Shams one about, you know, real quick, just to put it in perspective, can you play the Shams report for me? Because this is what you're going to hear for the next several days about their relationship. Let's take a listen.
On the court, they were great. But like over the last year or so, that personal relationship, it was as close to like, you know, not existent as you could have. But on the court, they were amazing, hardworking professionals together.
Okay. You don't have to be best friends off the court to be a great basketball duo or any kind of thing. That's Do you honestly think that Danny Ainge was hanging out with Bill Walton at Grateful Dead shows?
Yes.
No.
He took everybody to the Dead show.
And who's the one guy who didn't go? Danny Ainge.
Is that true?
We've interviewed Danny Ainge about it. He's like, I'm not going to that stupid show.
Oh, I thought he went. Okay.
No, of course. No, because it's drugs. And Danny was not into that, as we obviously know. That's not his lifestyle. But no. You don't have to be best friends with everyone. You just have to be able to have a common ground when you're at work and you're doing your job together on the court to have that kind of chemistry and be affable. And I don't think that like everyone who's trying to make a big deal out of it, he's got a kid now. Like he's got Deuce. And when you're a father and when you have a family, stuff, Rich, he didn't stuff play, takes up your time.
He didn't play Game 7, potentially because Jaylen Brown kept calling it his favorite season, and JB didn't find out about it until 30 minutes before the game.
The Game 7 happened, the favorite season thing was after the season was over. You're screwing up timelines here, my friend.
He was saying that all along. He said that beforehand. He was like, I'm so proud of this team, and now we've done, you know. And
you think that's why he didn't play Game 7?
I don't.
It's because he was mad at Jaylen Brown. Dude, you are hot taking. You are as sports talk radio right now as I've ever heard you.
What are we seeing? What are we? What, these clips we're playing are Milquetoast. You're calling it rice pilaf.
Yes.
That's what he's doing.
Well, okay, fine. I mean, maybe it is a bold lie, yes.
How about this? I don't think Tatum is horribly upset that Brown isn't here anymore.
Kidding? He signed his paper out of town. David. Brad was like, can you please sign this?
I don't think he's upset, but I also don't think that he like disliked, up until the end of this season, Jaylen Brown. I do think the comment that Jaylen Brown about this being his best season pissed him off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was anything.
And his on-court behavior in games 5 and 6 pissed him off.
No, I don't.
That's what Sam Amick is saying. They went off script. Jaylen Brown was blamed by the organization for going off script. That's Tatum saying that. That's my read on it.
No, well, I mean, I don't. I see. I thought that was a Brad Stevens thing. Because that is an interesting angle to the story. Is that they said that, you know, according to reports, the organization was ticked off that Jaylen Brown went off script. But right. To that I say, you know what? The script sucked. The script was jack up threes, and he was the one guy going hard to the basket.
Right.
So I have no problem with that. All right, real quick. We 2 minutes. We have to take a hydration break. We can still say that during the World Cup. Only 2 minutes, and we'll be right back, and we'll get more into this. Here we're right back.